Welcome, everybody. This is a back-to-back live episode, so this is episode 37. It's been quite a week, a lot going on, good and bad, so we'll dive into all of it, and we'll definitely call a lot of you in the audience to kind of give us some questions and, join in on the crazy week we've had. So, as usual, I'm Jordy, founder of Selene Capital. There are no Jordy coins, just to be clear, into the chat. So we have with us Justin, CEO of Astaria. Hey, Justin. We have Taiki, the newly engaged Taiki. So he's upgraded. Is it wife season?
No, not yet. It has to be 100K Bitcoin for wife season.
100K. That's my money. Yeah. You might be engaged a long time. We'll see.
Well, ETH BTC to 0.8 is the life-changing money season. That's so it's never gonna happen.
and Thicky's with us, so we'll dive into all kinds of market activity that's been happening. What stood out for you guys this week? For me, it's been mainly focused on the launches, and you know, I've been quite surprised with both the up and the down. I guess like Tuesday we had Athena. It was expected in the pre-market and all the, you know, whales markets and on all that stuff around 8 to 9 billion and ended up kind of quickly going to around double that. And then Wormhole was the exact opposite. It was expected around 16 and it's kind of come down to like 9, 10. Have you guys been trading those markets or looking at them? I guess Taiki, maybe you've been farming them.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't actively farm Wormhole or Athena, but I mean, the Wormhole airdrop, I got this bridge governance token at $15 billion. I'm like, do I want this? I mean, whenever you get airdrops, you should ask yourself, like, do I really want this? And for me, the answer was no. I was like, I don't want this. So I just, like, dumped it. You know,
did you dump it for Sol, for USDC, for WIF? Like, what was your choice?
I bought some Sol shitcoin called Metaplex, which is a maker like fundamentals play.
Bad coin.
Wait, what?
No. Metaplex? You gotta swap your Wormhole for a Costco hot dog token. It's only trading at like 7 cents now, and it's gonna go to the price of a Costco hot dog, $1.50. That is really the key here. That is the next meme coin meta.
I also saw like Wormhole, like a Wormhole.
That rug. I saw some people complaining about that one. Did that like?
Oh, did they rug? I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised.
Thank you.
I guess if the W coin pumped, that would have pumped, but because Wormhole's dumping, the Wormhole is also dumping, probably.
I see. You think Wormhole was beta to Wormhole?
Yes.
Thank you.
This industry is so ridiculous.
What have you been seeing on the Solana ecosystem over there?
I haven't been doing much. On your comment on Wormhole and Athena, I did expect Athena to like be valued much more than Wormhole, just given, you know, how much more Athena's been in the attention cycle, and also the fact that like Athena is probably like one of the most profitable protocols just like in the entire space right now. So yeah, definitely pleasantly surprised to see that flipping take place.
I actually want to call out, so a few episodes ago, I shared that analysis of the last a couple hundred airdrops that showed airdrops peak on like the third day generally, but that data was actually about a year old or a couple years old. Someone actually DM'd me on Twitter, I'll see if I could pull up the analysis, but they looked at like the last 15 or so big airdrops, and it seems like the trend now is that like price peaks a couple of weeks after the airdrop as opposed to like immediately after on the first couple of days. And for me, I'm actually holding my Wormhole airdrop. I just think you don't want to sell these things when the market's been dumping. Like these tokens launched in some of the worst days possible of the year where Bitcoin's like well off the highs and whatnot. And so for me, I'm sticking with it for now. And I don't have much Solana exposure, so it seems like a good play.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. Go ahead, Tiki.
I was just gonna say, like, especially when there's like bigger launches that are like, you know, multiple $1 billion circ, it takes, you know, a long time for the, you know, the airdrop fractal to play out and like all the airdrop receivers to churn through and get it to the long hold buyers. So, I mean, like, TIA took like a few weeks to actually like pop off. So I wouldn't be surprised if, and Manta as well took like a few days. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes longer for that sort of fractal to form.
Yeah. And the Jito thing is not even real because Jito recently hit new highs. And Jupiter too. Jupiter hit like 160. That was ridiculous. Like, I did not see that coming. Like anything in the solar ecosystem. 180. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Shout out to DGen Colo for making this and sending it along to me. But you can see here, like the median is day 16, which means that this is pushed out from like 2 weeks from what it used to be for when airdrops peak. And it sounds like this is old data, even though it's only 5 days old. So I'm basically just following this guideline. I haven't sold the wormhole yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's extremely unlikely that we're not going to have some rally at some point. It does feel like it's been, you know, down only for the first 36 hours, but it is a huge airdrop. They gave a lot of tokens to a lot of different people. They were very, very generous. And as you guys said, it takes a little bit of time to wash through the system, but eventually we'll probably see some rally. And some people in the chat are talking about potentially staking W for Monad, because I think that happened, like the reverse happened. So W even gave people in the Monad Discord tokens, and I think there might be some, you know, reciprocal moves maybe later on. So
that, I mean, it took a long time to moon. So like wormhole could follow the same fractal. It is the same. It's like, but they're both jump back.
Yeah, I guess from a trading perspective, it's maybe good to just like buy and sell in a couple weeks and just view it as that type of trade.
I'm curious, Troy. Like, I mean, you know, these airdrop events, it's always like a wealth effect for the people that hold these tokens, and they tend to like, there's some correlation there with where they rotate to next. Like, where do you think they might move that money into?
Yeah, you know, I was holding some betas expecting that the wormhole wealth effect would potentially help either things in Solana. So like WIF, it was the one that, unfortunately, we'll get to that, but I think that the culture of WIF has taken a painful blow, but maybe it was a painful blow. I thought Axelar might do well, you know, Synapse. I think some of the other smaller bridges were expected to maybe pump, but you know, given that the expectation for W was a little bit higher, those haven't actually, you know, done particularly well. And I think Solana as well, I thought would do quite well. I thought a lot of people would rotate into Sol, but we seem to be in a little bit of a rough patch for Sol as well.
What are your guys' thoughts on like the cynicism that I think the meme coin mania has brought in to basically everyone, even the people that play these meme coins and make money off them? Like, I feel like it leads to us all becoming so cynical on crypto, where like the sentiment now is, none of these coins have any real worth, so why speculate on the projects that can fail and the projects that have like execution risk, and not, why not just buy these meme coins if it's all a meme anyway? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Are you guys getting sucked into the cynicism?
It's partly like a short-termism, right? Like, people are thinking like, what's gonna potentially give me like a 10x the next day, and it's always gonna be a smaller random project, and it's not gonna be, you know, the $10 billion project. I see people in the chat talking about Boden and Tremp and stuff. Like, I think Boden's the only thing that's actually performed well in the last couple of days. And I think we're a little bit early for election season. I don't know that, but maybe it was undervalued in the attention spectrum.
I think I heard someone say that if you look in the past, if you look at the markets for the past, let's say, year, like the hottest narratives, they only last 3 to 6 months. It's like, I think Q3, Q4 last year, people were just jerking off to Robit, Unibot, Ox.
Even now, Lido, no one talks about it. Didn't people care about Lido coin at Q4 last year? That was a hot one.
The point is like kind of adding to what Jordy said about short-termism, people just feel like whatever people are feeling in the moment, they just think that it's going to continue on forever. But in reality, these things only last a couple months. I'm like generally bullish meme coins as a sector, like if we're in a bull market, but maybe we've reached peak mind share. But I'm also mid-curve, and you know, so like how am I supposed to know?
I hope it's peak meme coin, not because I'm against them or I think they're wrong or anything like that. I think it's fun, and like I have fun doing it too. I'm in, you know, a bunch of group chats, and it's just like a fun activity. But I would like to see excitement around real projects, right? Like I think, you know, with Eigenlayer coming soon, that's going to obviously draw a ton of excitement. We've got Athena, which is really cool. And like these things are exciting, but they're still like in the back burner for everyone's mind share. And it would be nice if we start talking about like the projects and what's actually being built as opposed to just the pure casino coins.
Let's talk a little bit about ETH. You know, it's obviously a sensitive topic.
No.
Yeah, you know, Justin's funny, like,
Brian A in the chat is actually asking if I've capitulated on my ETH thesis instead of calling out Justin. So Brian, I have said, like, you know, a few weeks ago that I think we kind of need the ETF buzz for ETH to outperform again. And I have been temporarily capitulating until it looks like ETH ETF is in the horizon. And then I think we see a really, really good rally for ETH and ETH BTC. Especially from the lows that we're at now. So I'm waiting patiently to see when the right time will be for the ETF season. But
can you?
Yeah.
But before we get into that and my thoughts, and I obviously have to accept a roasting from Thicky in the chat, Jordy, can you just share what it's like? I mean, you're working very closely in building an L2, and there's terrible, I wouldn't say terrible, but there's negative sentiment towards L2s and ETH scaling roadmap. As a builder and working with a team that's doing this, like what's it like on the inside?
Well, Mantle thankfully is the highest performing L2 this year. So like but price wise at least. So the sentiment is good, as you can imagine, even despite the environment generally being bad. I do have a sense that we will not have infinite L2s, and you want to be one of the ones that kind of make the cut. And part of it is like the attention and the mind share of the users. So not everybody has that mind share. Even the ones that people know about, like Stark, right? Like, I don't know exactly what, you know, what ecosystem is going to look like there. It should have been a bit more developed by now. So, I mean, sentiment is a little bit annoyed at the amount of, you know, first underperformance of ETH. And You just like you have Solana meme coins that are slash Sol. So when Sol goes up, you know, whatever Boden is going to go up. You know, something like Puff, for example, it was issued in ETH. So it was like 42,069 ETH for one Puff. And now it's down to like 14,000. So, you know, maybe it's going to go down to 1-to-1 parity. But my point is it's massively outperformed. But because ETH has gone down, you know, 25%, that sort of affects every pairing that is an ETH pairing. So I think it's a little bit of a bummer for the entire ecosystem until that sort of changes.
Gotcha. I can share my thoughts on ETH BTC, as I know the chat's been hounding me on that. We're down maybe 5% on the week, maybe a little more on ETH BTC. You know, it's interesting. I don't know how much more I can say, except for like in the short term, I've clearly been wrong and I deserve a mental health break from the ETH BTC topic. But like one other thing I will say is like, is this time really different? Because last cycle, ETH was a laggard, it was slow to evolve. People were saying the barbell at that time was BTC and DeFi coins. Now it's BTC and meme coins slash Solana, basically. And I just think it's not the worst time to be a contrarian. I mean, I know I've been saying that for a while, but if it turns out we get an ETF at some point this year, even if it takes till December, like I think your ETH purchase relative to Bitcoin is going to look pretty good right now. So I don't know how much there is to say. I feel like I have to go down with the ship at this point. Like I just refuse to be the guy that swaps their ETH back to Bitcoin at 0.045 or whatever we're at. And then, you know, this thing pumps and I'm caught on the wrong side. Like I'd rather just ride this thing all the way down.
the sentiment to chat.
I mean, how can I can't, if I'd rather lose all my money than be wrong, right? Like at this point Like the downside of losing everything is much lower than me swapping to Bitcoin, ETH pumping, and then me missing that and just getting trolled more. I'd rather just hold BTC to zero.
the toughest part about this trade is that, like, I think everyone in their heart of hearts knows ETH should flip Bitcoin. At least that's what I feel. It's just like, it's such like an easy trade that like the timing is so difficult because everyone's just like trying to, I don't want to say be greedy, but like they just want to be ETH barons and just own all the ETH. So personally, I think you go down to like 0.04, maybe even 0.04. Yeah, 0.045. But in 2 years' time, Justin, you will be a rich man. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll say about this is like this sort of struck me when Bitcoin was like 20K. Everyone wanted the asset. They just wanted to buy it at a better price. I actually think everyone really does want to hold ETH to your point, Vicky, but people want to buy it at a better price. And maybe we get there, maybe we don't. I just think the downside to your point is like, yeah, okay, we go to 0.04, even 0.03. But when you factor in taxes and just the possibility of you're wrong if you swap now, I just don't think it makes much sense.
Yeah. And also, I guess if you're holding ETH on a centralized exchange, you might actually be cucked. But if you're staking with EigenLayer and you get, you know, fat airdrops and whatnot, then technically ETH/BTC doesn't look as bad if you consider the staking rate and all those factors. Maybe that's cope, but I feel like if you're using ETH productively on chain, then it's not as bad as, you know, the ETH/BTC chart is telling you.
The last thing I'll note on this is an interesting comment from Samuel, like, what's the invalidation for you? Such an interesting question, because I actually don't really think that way. I feel like a lot of times, like, people are pressured to become traders in the crypto space, but like, you don't actually have to be a trader. Like, it doesn't actually matter to me in the long term if ETH/BTC goes to 0.035, 0.04, or if this is the bottom and it goes up from here. My plan has always just been to hold ETH and see what happens. My plan has never been to sort of trade between ETH and Bitcoin and comparing my asset to other assets that are going up much more. So for me, it's not something I worry about. Of course, it is a little depressing looking at, you know, it's like the quote, everyone is getting hilariously rich and you're not, which is tough, but, that's the space we live in. So.
Yeah. I think you were going to say something.
I feel like that metric where you measure staking yield onto a coin is like the Tyche indicator or something.
The Tyche indicator? wait, what?
Like with Celestia.
Oh. I guess if you bought Celestia this year, it kind of sucks, but.
No, well, I mean, with them, it's still like, you know, very well worth it. Assuming you sold.
Yeah. Because if you didn't get DIM, it's pretty bad. But if you got DIM, you're like just chilling, you know. So I guess it kind of depends on the timing as well.
We see here Larry Fink gonna pump your ETH bag. So let's quickly bring up the Evan's four pronged ETH thesis just to look at the four guys. I want to like think about which one of them is gonna actually. So we have Larry Fink. You know, BlackRock has issued an ETF proposal. They're whatever, 1 zillion to 1. And then we have Brian Armstrong. So, you know, Coinbase is obviously like very heavily invested in Base. They're putting a lot of effort into it and seems to be doing well. I don't know. We have GCR. So GCR, you know, kind of always talks about the 10K is sort of like inevitable. And we have Sriram. And this is kind of like the belief that the massive EigenLayer airdrop will kind of be like a wealth effect and revitalize the community. If you had to choose one of these four theses, you know, for me, it's the GCR thesis. I just feel like he sees some things clearly sometimes and I've learned not to fade. Vicky, out of those four, like which one do you think is like?
I think probably Fink and the ETF is the most interesting to me. I actually think the Sriram and the EigenLayer one is already played out. I think most
already of them played out. The token's not even out.
Most people have already, like, you know, the restate, like when EigenLayer opened their caps, like ETH/BTC ripped afterwards. And people were buying Justin Sun, Richard Hart is buying ETH and like restaking. Well, not Richard Hart, but like, yeah, there's buying ETH and restaking it. I actually think when EigenLayer, the airdrop happens and it unlocks, like all this ETH is actually going to get sold on the markets, and it's actually going to be a bearish unlock event.
Whoa!
I actually have a counterpoint to this, Vicky. I think actually the more appropriate comparison is when withdrawals went live for staked ETH, because we actually thought there would be like a huge unstaking event because ETH was literally locked up, but it actually was the most bullish thing when you talk about lockups. And all EigenLayer ETH is withdrawable right now. You can withdraw it if there's like a 24-hour, there's a very short withdrawal period to take your ETH out of EigenLayer, and you retain your points. You don't lose your points for withdrawing. So I actually think when the token goes live, and this is not a bull case for ETH, but I don't think it's played out yet. But when the token goes live and there's an actual yield that you can calculate, you know, this staked ETH yield is 3% now, maybe with EigenLayer it's 5% or 6%. I think then that's when it becomes more attractive personally.
So you like EigenLayer out of those four? Are you kind of like...
No. I think short-term Larry Fink is going to be the story of 2024 if the ETH ETF is approved or denied. It's going to be, you know, on his shoulders, let's say. But I think long-term you have to trust Coinbase on this one. I think it's a huge signal that Coinbase is building base. And I still think, maybe this is cope, but I still think the innovation happens on the Ethereum stack. I still am not seeing like the true innovation happening outside of the EVM. Maybe I'm totally biased and missing something with Solana, but like I haven't seen anything that's 0 to 1 on Solana get built yet.
Yeah,
thank you.
I want to add to the Thicky comment. Like obviously the biggest, you know, it's kind of up to Larry Fink and the ETF in the short term, but I think for the rest of the cycle, I do think EigenLayer is the most hyped ETH-based launch. So I never imagined that people would sell ETH, like unrestake their ETH and sell. But I think what we could see is, because EigenLayer is so hyped, people think it's going to hit like $100 billion FTV and whatnot, which I think is still reasonable. If EigenLayer launches and it's not as exciting, if it is all the news, then I can definitely see that taking down the entire, I mean, maybe not like the entire altcoin market, but if people get so hyped in EigenLayer before it happens and it's not as amazing as expected, then maybe we do see people like sell off their alt exposure. And also, you know, if people want to buy Eigen, then they have to sell something, right, to buy. And it's kind of the idea that if we keep launching new tokens with a limited pool of capital, like at some point, you know, the average price has to come down.
Well, let's talk about like, yeah, there's a comment here saying I'm worried about AVS demand, that it will be small and slow compared to the TVL. And so like, you know, with EigenLayer, we have two separate games going on. One is like, just like the pure speculation of these tokens, you know, like EtherFi launched at like, you know, 5 to 8 billion. And then like the next ones are also going to hope to have some ratio of that as well. And then EigenLayer itself launching at 35 billion, then you're just getting points on points on points. This is something that sort of like drives the crypto casino where people are just like speculating on all these different tokens and they have something to play with. This is not different than what's happening on Solana. These things don't necessarily have like fundamental grounding in being worth, you know, billions of dollars, but there's just like a lot of activity around it. And that sort of like builds itself and becomes real. It's like a self-reinforcing thing. Versus you have the actual underlying ADS demand, which is what's the actual revenue? And we've seen the Celestia revenue numbers. It's not that expensive to use Celestia, and maybe 20 billion for, you know, that cash flow into the future is not that high. What is the AVS demand for security? How much are they really paying? And like, what are the slashing conditions on that? Who's going to start trying to rug, you know, like restaking ETH? So there is a little bit of a question mark around the reality. I think that the token game itself is looking very strong. And, you know, people like Justin Sun, you said, like, you know, he got into EigenLayer and then he's been farming all these different LRT protocols, putting like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars into them. So he's having a fun game.
I think you bring up a good point, Jordy, where we in this space conflate the token price with success when the two couldn't be further from the truth. Like, you could just imagine Solana's price today was still $20, right? Like, we would all be saying it's only worth $20. We'd be like, oh, it's only for meme coins. It's just a casino. What have they built? What's new? But the price reinforces the narrative for us just because that's how humans are. And so, yeah, I think the money to be made here is when you can separate price and the actual product itself, which is, I think, very important to do. And we don't really do that generally in our space.
So Matt Wong from Paradigm had an interesting post. And he's sort of like asking what part of, you know, within this L2 world, how does ETH L1 do well? And we're seeing some comments kind of like bringing up the same point, like, why don't you just buy, you know, all these L2 tokens and see which ones are resonating well. So we have the tweet up, if you can bring it up, Justin, here in the chat. But he's sort of like asking, like, for ETH L1 to do well, what matters the most? Is it the gas token of ETH? Is it the data availability layer? Is it being money? Is it just the philosophical alignment? Like, what is it? And I kind of agree with you know, Dan Robinson and some of the comments that he got, which is the only bullish thing for ETH, and this is the only thing I've personally always been bullish on, is just this like community money thesis. I think ETH has to be like the base currency of all these like ecosystems and all these L2s, and it can't be around the actual revenue stream of gas. I think that's not going to be near enough to justify, you know, like a $1 trillion valuation. It has to be a moneyness. So I don't know if any of you guys have any comment on this.
I mean, ETH cannibalized its own business, right? When they moved to the blob based payment method for L2s, right? So that was like going to be a huge revenue source. The thesis was ETH L1 is going to be reserved for the whales, the people that don't care about $100 transactions, and L2s is where ETH's going to make a ton of its money because those L2s have to pay ETH for security. And yeah, I mean, ETH is caught between a rock and a hard place. The more expensive you make the chain, the less useful it is, but the less expensive you make it, the less valuable the chain is. So it's sort of this interesting balance. Solana has taken obviously the opposite approach. And
yeah, I mean, have you seen Solana throughput though? Like, it's been pretty painful. Mm-hmm. I tried to use it quite a lot in the last few days. We had the Zeus launch, which we'll talk about as well. Thank you. Have you tried to use Solana? Have you gotten transactions through?
It's kind of tough, but I hear that if you up your gas fee a little bit higher, just from like 0.1 to 0.2 pennies, then like it becomes smoother. I haven't tried it personally, but yeah, I have experienced some issues with Solana. Regarding your point on ETH, though, I do want to say, like, I agree with you that like focusing too much on like burn and gas, I think it is kind of like a psyop. Like, the way I think about it is, like, you know, 45% of global gold demand every year comes from jewelry, but like, you know, jewelry demand isn't driving gold price. It's like, you know, gold's status as an SOV that drives it. And I think the jewelry demand is just like a minor thing that like keeps the price trading a little bit better than it normally would. So I think as an asset gets bigger, like, you know, when you're at that like 100 billion to 500, like 300 billion asset size, like Solana or like ETH was, then like this burn casino thesis like really does affect the valuation. But like, when you get bigger, like, you can't sustain solely on that. It has to be something like bigger than that to, you know, sustain the values might take.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
By the way, guys, we're near our all-time high. We have 450 live viewers, so our editor is going to kill me. Here we go. Like and subscribe. He knew, Brad knew I had to do this. So yeah, please like and subscribe. It's good to have you all here, and we want to just, you know, have you notified when our new weekly video comes out. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the third launch. So we had another Jupiter launch. It was the Zeus launch. We used the launch pad on Solana, the LFG launch pad, which is what, you know, Jupiter had used for their token, as well as like the meme coin WEN token that kind of came out before. I did try once again, failed once again to buy, you know, like they have this bonding curve where it goes from, in this case, it was 300 million to 800 million FTV. And I tried to use the pre-market limit order. And, you know, I was fine to pay like whatever, 500-600 million. So it kind of used a bunch of different wallets and tried to like buy some. And once I can, it was gone in one block. I didn't, like, it just disappeared. Somebody just took it all, the entire thing. I think it was it was like 30 million. So it kind of was giving me flashbacks once again of the Stargate thing, but it just zoop. And then people started trying to trade it. And then whoever bought it all probably sold some back. So they basically bought everything at like 30, 40 cents. And then they were just like selling it at 80. So whoever did that MEV probably made eight figures. So I don't know what you guys think. I mean, maybe it's just a matter of like not setting the price band long enough, and maybe there shouldn't be cheap tokens because it just gets to MEV. It somehow doesn't feel exactly right from a game theory standpoint. I don't know if you guys have participated in these type of launches.
I personally haven't. I think I'm kind of more interested in how the Jupiter token's been trading, because I think when it first launched, it was, oh my God, it's 8 billion FDV, and then it doubled. And now people are staking Jupe for future allocation. And I guess the playbook really is stake token for future coins, because otherwise, you know, if you're sharing revenues, your token's a security, but if you're staking something for airdrops, it's not really a security, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, this is sort of like the very traditional concept of, you know, what's valuable is distribution. If you have a large channel on YouTube, if you have a large, like, you know, Twitter following, you have distribution. In the Solana ecosystem, you know, Jupiter has had very strong distribution that's very valuable right now, because, you know, everyone's kind of going to be following along if there's a launch pad. And then the stakers, you know, I think Zeus gave a couple percent, I think, to Solana, so to Jupiter stakers. So they end up getting paid for the fact that they're a part of this distribution.
Regarding distribution, Jordy, is it worth talking a little bit about Echo? I mean, I know a couple of you guys, right? Or all three of you are eventually going to be running Echo groups. I could consider doing it as well. Do you think that's the solution to this distribution problem?
No, I mean, I've tried to go, so just for everybody in the chat, like Echo is you know, Kobe has launched a sort of, what we call it, like it's kind of like disintermediating VCs, where people can bring deals directly to, you know, mass audience instead of just like a few VCs. The thing with Echo is like, it doesn't scale infinitely. Like even if you have, you know, 500 people in your group, if you bring a deal that's $1 million, if everybody wants to do it, that's like, you know, $1K or $2K a person. Imagine if you had like 100,000 people. So it's a great tool for targeting communities that maybe have something in common, and you want to target like the gaming one or the AI one and give allocation to like those communities. But I don't know if it can be that, like, you know, 100,000 people. Like even these groups, I think they're limited to 100 Americans, right? So
yeah, it also, it's interesting, it spawns the same race condition that you get with an on-chain operation. It's just not on-chain, right? Like the race condition is now, do I have my money on Base? Is it in the Echo platform? And am I going to be one of the first X number of people that can buy into this deal? And it seems to me that sophisticated actors could end up botting that as well, because I don't think, I mean, we'll see how it shakes out, but I don't think it's, there's no incentive for the person structuring the deal. Like Ansem has a very big platform on Echo already. There's no incentive to limit the size of your investment group, right? Like you should theoretically want to max it out so that every deal you do is oversubscribed or fully subscribed. And so you're just creating the race condition off chain versus doing like an on chain MEV race condition.
I don't know. I think some people might take a different approach than just letting infinite people in and, you know, having them all kind of bot each other and whatever. So I guess the big news actually for the audience is that Taiki has succumbed. He's no longer saying no to all private flow coming his way. He feels good about the fact that he can share it with his community. So he is for the first time being tasting the dark side that we all have been tasting.
If you share my screen, Justin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a, because I kind of had this post around this moral, I don't know, like this personal dilemma that I had around not doing private deals and whatnot for, I guess, the lack of fairness. But you know, Kobe. I mean, I feel like if some random anon made Echo, it's people would think it's a scam. But because Kobe's doing it, it's like, oh, like it has to be legit. And I do agree that, you know, running an Echo group is basically the only audience aligned way for someone to monetize an audience, because you have to invest on the same terms, take symmetric risk. And I only get paid if people make money. And I think there's a flat $5,000 fee to do each individual deal. So the syndicate leader, I suppose, is only incentivized to bring really good deals. And I guess this is only possible.
Are you doing what Justin said? Are you just letting everybody in? Or are you doing it just for your subscribers on your like, you know, research thing? Or how are you curating your group?
Yeah, I'm still thinking about it. I don't want it to be sibled, so I have to figure out a way to
make it. I have two things to say about that. Jordy, you got to let me into your group. It's absolutely ridiculous that I'm not in it already. I have a pending application as of like 3 days ago. Everyone else has accepted me. I'm in like 10 different groups, and I'm still waiting on yours, which I think is horribly unfair. Two, I
don't think I'm in it either.
All right, Jordy, take care of the lads. And then two, I think I see comments there should be a Steady Lads Echo group, which would be fun. Maybe good, someday.
Good. Justin just wants to double dip.
Yeah. That's Jordy, the other weird thing.
DMs, let me double dip in the Echo group too.
There is this weird double dip thing where if two groups have the same deal, you can, you know, if the allocation is capped at 2K for one group and 2K in another group, you can double dip and do it in two groups, which is interesting. So yes, I want to get in Jordy's group, Taiki's group, Thicky's group, anyone's group. I want in.
This is the problem though. Like you don't want this. You can't have this. Like I don't want to allow this.
I mean, they could block double dipping. Double dip.
There's no way.
They can block double dipping.
Triple very dip, different. Though. One wants to double dip the chip and the other one is like, you know, stay away from the bowl.
The point of Echo is to give regular retail participation.
I am right regular now. Retail. I'm holding you. What do you want from me?
Well, I guess you are, you know, doing some mental health break because of the ETP-TC ratio, but...
You got to normalize the triple dip, investing in the private round yourself and then doing multiple Echo groups.
Thank you. Are you doing an Echo group? Thicky, is Thicky doing an Echo one?
I'm setting one up. I'm looking into it. But I'll just say Justin seemed like the type of guy who was like a huge credit card maxer back in college. No?
No, not at all. I keep it simple with like 2% cash back credit cards.
Keep it simple.
But yeah, Thicky, let me in your group, dude. I'll share deal flow.
Just for reference, so the first deal did go through and somebody brought, I think it was $300,000 or so of the Athena.
Huge.
I participated.
Ansem? Somebody said it was Ansem, but I don't know if it was Ansem. Because I think
it was Sir Shokin. Sir Shokin.
There were two actually.
So they both brought it?
Yep. Yeah. I got into the Athena one, but wasn't into, there was another group that ran one. I wasn't accepted in that group at that time.
Okay. I'm not sure who did the Athena one.
No, it was Sir Shokunin.
Yeah, I think Thicky's correct.
And Ansem.
Yeah, they might have been both, but like that.
I would share my screen, but if you share your screen, you get instantly banned from Echo, and we can't have that. But I can I can promise it was Ansem too.
Forgot about that. Nice.
So the bottom line is that okay, maybe they both did. So they both brought it in. This thing, you know, mark to market. Obviously, it's low circulating supply. You know, high FTV, but it marked to like a 30x, right?
Yeah.
Instantly. So the whatever 600K that went in ended up making like a 24 million kind of mark to market.
No, which, it's more.
Maybe more like 30 600K.
Million. Oh, wait, I'm being retarded. Sorry.
At one point, I calculated it. I put in 2K and I think it was worth 66 at one point. But like one interesting thing to note is like, obviously, it's all locked up for many years, and I don't think you can OTC this stuff like you could with normal deals.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, people try. I have had like an anonymous DM saying like, hey, can you like hedge out a Athena thing? And I'm like, first of all, guy will probably just like wipe your equity clean, like if he gets a sense that you're doing this. And secondly, like, yeah, with this stuff that's locked up for a long time, like, you know, you have to take a large discount. So I don't even know if you want to do that once you realize, you know, the discount you would take, because everyone's just like, next day they think they can just cash out a 30x, but it doesn't quite work that way.
It's interesting. They actually sent out an email. People didn't realize that if you participate in this, you are locked at the same schedule as other investors. And so after the token went live, they emailed you saying like, we'll actually reverse the deal if you want.
Oh, wow.
This is the only time though. Yeah.
That's insane.
I hope I shouldn't be, I'm allowed to share this. I don't want to get banned from the platform. Actually,
we imagine he gets banned
on the pre-recording or post-recording.
Dude, the perp funding on Binance was 400% negative on the first day, which implied that like a bunch of people are trying to hedge and lock it in, and it went up like 50% in their face.
Yeah, it's like the Texas hedge.
It might not be. So it could be like you said, it could be investors trying to hedge for 4 years, which I don't know. I think the more likely thing is it's season two farmers that are only trying to lock in for, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, whatever exactly they said it was going to be, because you can lock in, you know, a certain number of, they're not called shards anymore. They're called sats now because they're moving to Bitcoin, which is, you know, a larger market cap. And therefore, you know, some people might have tried to hedge thinking they're going to get a certain number of tokens. And like you said, it just went super negative. I think this is generally a sign that, yeah, there's demand for hedging, but there's not enough supply out there of tokens.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes sense. I love how they change points, shards, sats every season.
We call them like astrological units or something.
So the shards was like Ethereum kind of like shards. And then the sats is like the Bitcoin thing. So if they do like Solana next, what's going to be like the...
The manlets? I don't know.
Farm manlets?
Farm manlets? That'd be hilarious.
Lamports. They're called lamports.
Lamports?
That's like the Gwei of ETH or of Solana.
Oh, what the fuck? Why did they name it that?
I don't know. You need like a funny name, like Sats.
Yeah. Yeah. George, I've kind of been wondering, like, I mean, you talk to a lot of funds. Do you have a sense of like what the actual returns are for venture funds that are not like after they're either OTCing at a discount or they're holding for the full lockup? Like, what do you think returns are actually like? Because obviously like it's not like this, you know, 500x that you're seeing on Athena after TGE. Like you either sell at a massive discount or you hold for 4 years, right? So like, what are those returns actually like?
So it's like extremely volatile. Immensely volatile. All I need to tell you is like, look at Multicoin. It went from, you know, 0 to 10 billion back to, you know, not 98% down and then running it back up. It was down to like 500 million. So it was down 95%.
Now they're all the way back. It's nuts.
And it's all the way back.
It's like Masayoshi's son. It's like the roller coaster is insane.
Yeah,
it's an insane roller coaster, which means that I can't answer your question because it really depends on like when do they exit, and some of them never exit. So who knows? Maybe they'll be at a trillion, maybe they'll be back at, you know, minus 99. There are some VCs that take a more active approach on getting out when the market's hot and then not investing at all and waiting for, you know, things to quieten down. Personally, I think that's wrong. There's really good deals that I'm seeing in the bull market. I think people's creative juices start flowing in the bull market. And even though a lot of it is just circular bullshit, there's some good things that come out. So we have been writing a lot of checks right now, even though it's, you know, the valuations are a bit higher, but c'est la vie.
Do you disagree with Arthur Hayes? Like, I've listened to him on a couple podcasts, and he's even wrote this as well. He's like not deploying capital in venture bets right now. He thought the time to do that was last year. And if you deploy now, basically, like you're going to be unlocking at the absolute earliest you're unlocking in the next theoretical bear market. Do you still think it's a good time to deploy on the venture side?
Everyone's situation is different. I try to, you know, for Cellini, we're adding a lot of value. We try to add a lot of value to the projects, especially even if they're late stage and they're going to market. So I can get flow that probably, you know, nobody else can get because I'm really helping. Like I'm talking to the founders.
Nobody's flow is better than Jordy's flow.
I know, right? Marketing's flow is top tier.
Like today, I spent like my day today talking to all the AI founders and like just going through tokenomics with all of them and figuring out, you know, what makes sense in this like crazy AI crypto world. And I don't mind writing a check at $1 billion valuation if the thing is likely to launch at, you know, 5+. So being very active right now, I'm not trying to get into like pre-seed deals at $10 million. I agree, like those are not really coming by very often. So, you know, Fiki, you're probably seeing some interesting stuff as well. You know, going back to the distribution channel, like you must be getting kind of interesting looks, I'm sure.
Yeah. I agree with your take that like the later stage stuff, even though it's at a higher valuation, is probably like a sure bet than some early stage. I'm hopeful that like the ETF being out distant in the future creates like a super cycle effect, or at least like a, you know, another bull in 2 years or something. But yeah.
There is a lot of like Bitcoin flow. I would say that's the stuff that I've done the least so far. And I hesitate. I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on like the Bitcoin ecosystem stuff. So obviously there was just stacks at the beginning, but now there's like infinite stuff. All right. Like everyone's doing an L2 on Bitcoin. Everyone's doing, you know, Eigenlayer for Bitcoin, right? Like that's like the Bounce Bit stuff. You got the Merlin stuff. I feel like Bitcoin holders are not like very adventurous when it comes to like DeFi or doing stuff with their coins. They just want to hold the asset and just treat it as a macro asset. And I've been wrong so far. Like there's much more activity, especially in Asia, China. There is, you know, attention and demand for Bitcoin related products that are not just holding Bitcoin. So I've been a bit surprised. Have you guys been surprised?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of Bitcoin deals, but like 99% of deals are not Bitcoin. It sort of strikes me that like the Bitcoin builder and developer community has sort of been like pushed out from the venture space. Like I don't really know many funds that have like deployed a ton of capital in the Bitcoin space. I mean, Nick Carter was basically like the biggest Bitcoin only ecosystem investor to a point. And then when I think he raised Castle Island Ventures, he expanded to other smart contract and other layer one chains. Yeah, it does strike me like there's just much less funding in the Bitcoin space from a venture perspective.
I kind of feel like, I mean, I'm not really close to the venture side, so I'm not really sure, but sometimes it feels like the people funding these Bitcoin DeFi L2 projects, they're not really Bitcoin people. It's like ETH people that want Bitcoin beta that are just trying to latch onto a narrative. Maybe they can explain to their LPs that, you know, we're buying Bitcoin beta. But I think, by the way, we're episode 37, which is kind of insane. I can't believe we made it this far. But I remember, like, you know, maybe like in the first couple of episodes, I said, like, Bitcoin L2s are kind of like the Cardano of this cycle. They don't really have to ship anything. As long as Bitcoin's pumping, like, it's going to pump, right? That's kind of my view. I'm not sure if you have.
I think, like I said, I used to think that, but I don't know. Maybe TK is a different take. I'm starting to change my view. Just seeing like in Asia, and specifically like in the Chinese community, there's a lot of Bitcoin love. You know, like OKX, for example, like they're supporting all the Ordinal stuff and all this like Bitcoin stuff, and it does feel like there is potentially a product market fit. It is there. It exists somehow, and there is an intersection that is large enough on the Venn diagram between, you know, Bitcoin people and like, you know, adventurous alt people. And there is like something there.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I agree with you. Yeah. I think that like the BRC craze was very big in China. And I do think that like trying to find some exposure to like the speculative Bitcoin plays, I think like runes and the upgrade there, from BRC to like a new, basically like a new token standard for Ordinals is going to be like an interesting one. And I've been trying to like find projects that are related to that.
Should we do some audience Q&A before we do pasta? Or
I don't know. Yeah, audience Q&A.
Yeah, so spam us your questions.
There was one a little bit a few minutes ago from Hammerman saying, considering NFTs haven't done anything this cycle, does it mean they're dead or does it mean that we're far from the top? They have been weak. I saw even Punks, I didn't quite pay a lot of attention, but I saw posts that Punks might be facing a liquidation cascade because of Blur loans, and potentially we might be seeing a new low on Punks below 40 ETH. Justin, have you been following the Punks at all?
I have, and I feel like I laugh because I think every time an NFT question comes up, Jordan, you toss it my way, which I find funny. I haven't really followed the NFT space too much.
An NFT lending product.
Justin?
Yeah, I capitulated though. I capitulated on that. Now
it's no longer identified.
Yeah.
Branding.
He's not capitulating on ETPTC though.
Our platform supports 721s and 1155s as well, but we have a greater emphasis on ERC20s, and that's what we're building towards. Let's say that. I think, you know, I haven't followed it too closely, but I have listened to a couple commentators and podcasts just talking about this blur effect of basically like taking so much value out of the NFT ecosystem and like taking value out in a masterful way. Like Blur has been the Blur ecosystem, Blur, Blend, and now Blast has been like sort of masterful at that, at financializing these things, providing liquidity and driving the floor down. I personally don't think we see a resurgence in the 10K PFP mania phase. I think things like CryptoPunks could do well over the long term, but if you're talking to me, if a CryptoPunk is 40 ETH, I'd much rather have the 40 ETH than one CryptoPunk. That's just me personally. I think sort of like when you buy the CryptoPunk, you're taking on the risk of ETH and then also the risk that NFTs go somewhere, which I don't think is a sure thing. And it could outperform. I just don't see it that likely. And I do think NFTs as a technology have a very bright future. Like 721s, non-fungible tokens, is obviously important. But it's hard for me to see people getting excited about 10,000 PFP collections again, just because it's fundamentally not that exciting, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's a topic that we actually haven't touched. I mean, we talk about ETH-BTC, I feel like every couple of shows, but NFTs we haven't dug into. I'm curious, like, Thicky and Taiki, what's your take on the current NFT situation?
I mean, I think the Bitcoin NFTs have been doing very, very well.
Is it the Node them. Monkeys and what is Node the Bitcoin? Monkeys,
yeah, Bitcoin puppets. If we bought like a Bitcoin frog in like October of last year, and it's like I don't even know how much. 50x.
How can you even say that with a straight face, Thicky? It's like this. It's so silly.
You just gotta. Yeah, it's what the people want. I think ETH NFTs will bottom after ETH BTC bottoms. I think it's a necessary fact. It's not going to do it before.
That's a very good point. I was thinking the same thing, which is ultimately like these things are cultural artifacts, and the strength of the culture matters a lot into like the valuation of, the things in that culture. And if Ethereum ends up being the winner of the world sort of like community online, then you better fucking try to get a CryptoPunk, because they will have this like relic status. But you know, right now, maybe not. And even the rocks, if Ethereum is not doing well, the rocks kind of rely on that.
Listen, wouldn't you want the utility of ETH versus like a rock or a punk? Like maybe these things outperform by like 10%, 20%, even 100% over the next, 5 years over ETH, but like you can collateralize ETH and borrow dollars against it. You can stake ETH, you can restake ETH. It's extremely liquid. You have some sort of guarantees about risk in the future. We've got the ETF coming up. It's like the risk reward just doesn't make sense. Like if you're going to buy an NFT, you might as well try to gamble on the latest meme coin, right? Yeah. Like that's where the liquidity and volume is. Like
this is why we are nowhere near the top. Like the top is like when Justin buys a CryptoPunk because he's so euphoric and he's like dunking on Thicky like every single episode.
I would buy them at like a price like a 5 to 10 ETH. That would be like fun. But if it's 40 ETH now, that's, I don't know, like 120K or 150K. Like, wouldn't you rather just have the ETH, stake it in EigenLayer or some restaking platform, or invest in a venture deal on Echo?
Maybe. NFT restaking. Who's building this?
You get slashed like the validator will slash your crypto punk.
It'll be like lose a pixel. Like a star on
the market will out, like, Solana NFTs are still dead, and that's kind of a good point. Maybe you know, maybe in that culture they've just found the product market fit with the meme coins rather than the NFTs. I mean, obviously Mad Lads is doing amazing, and there's a couple more.
There's gonna be the Tensor airdrop, I think, on the 8th, which might and Coinbase, like you mentioned, like I sold my wormhole for Metaplex, which is also an NFT infra play on Sol. So I feel like NFTs on Solana can be a leading indicator for NFTs on ETH, because if meme coins are pumping on Solana, then if NFTs come back, they have to pump on Sol first before ETH.
Yeah, it's a good
point. So
is there going to be a Mantle NFT ecosystem? Are you guys building that or thinking about that at all, Jordy? Is it even important right now?
I think, you know, it comes naturally. And once you build a community and it's a strong community, then they're going to want to start, you know, having something represented. I'm very much against the lame shit, I'll call it, of just copying like a monkey, or like you're just doing whatever Solana did last cycle, which was like, oh, there's Bored Apes, we'll do Solana ape whatever. And it's so dumb. And it's the same thing with these like dog coins, like each thing had like an Inu. I'm just not a fan, even though there is a Mantle Inu. I just hate copy pasting stuff. So if there is going to be such a thing, I would hope that it is creative and organic and not just an Inu and a ape.
Yeah. Taiki, you famously loved Pudgies. You have a Pudgy. I know you have a Pudgy printout of your Pudgy. But it looks like you've replaced the Pudgy in your background with college sports regalia. Have you capitulated on your penguins?
Well, yeah, I did. I mean, my Pudgy trade was actually really good. Like I bought like two Pudgies at like 40 and before, like during blur farming, and that did really well. But yeah, I sold.
I also like, on this note of like the NFT communities, I get that they're like, the vision was like, oh, if you have this NFT, you'll be part of this community and you'll be able to organize your thoughts and capital to like extract alpha and build culture. But like the issue is, we see every time these communities forms, they're like the most cringe thing that you would not want to be a part of. Like, I'll never forget the video outside of Ape Fest, when like it was just like a bunch of dudes like pretending to be monkeys. That Twitter video.
We have to bring it up now. Let's bring up, you have the whiff video. I mean, I woke up this morning and I'm like, oh fuck, I need to sell my bag. Like whatever. I didn't have that much. I had some, but I'm just like.
Yeah. Let me grab that now.
Immediately.
There's so many of them. That's the issue.
The thing about whiff that was like so good. Okay, here we go.
So, by the way, for the audience, this is the whiff party.
At NFT NYC, right?
Yeah.
There's another one I want to pull up as well, though. There's so many of these.
The strength of whiff and why it was just crushing and destroying Bonk and everything else, it was because it was just so clean. It was so pure. You know, dog with hat. You put like an F as well instead of a TH, makes it quirky. And that's it. Like, you know, left curvers liked it. The right curvers liked it. Anybody could do whatever they want. Even the mid curvers could kind of like do whatever they wanted with it. You can imagine it as whatever you want. There was no association with anything. It was clean. And then this thing comes out. And now, like, it's no longer cool. I'm sure there's people still holding. I don't want to FUD anyone. But like.
But also that's price leads narrative, right?
Now, whenever somebody says whiff.
No, but it's like that's what happens. Like these communities, if they get too big, they just self-destruct, right? They get so big that they're cringe. Like the second it's not new, it's cringe.
It's not mainstream. You're not early.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think these are typically top signals for these communities.
Do you remember when people got blinded at the ape party in like Singapore? They used like dangerous lasers and
It was Miami party, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Singapore is way too health and safety to allow that level of destruction to happen. We have some more questions. Let's go through them quickly. Let's do a quick fire one for 10 minutes and then we'll go to Pasta of the Week. Let's see. Thoughts about Sui and Verachain? Oh, go ahead.
No, I saw this really good question from F3DZ at 11 a.m. I don't know if you can pull it up, Justin, but question for all the lads. Question for all the lads, especially Thicky, no homo. What was your tipping point in your trading career? Is the question. So no homo, Thicky, but like I guess you have to, oh there it is. What was the tipping point of your career?
I'd say it was like, you know, having like good mentors and eventually just like finding like a set of, you know, iterating on a trade and just like making money and then like sizing it up and then like expanding that over and over again. That it takes like, it's a really slow build up and then it's like a huge capitulation top, much like how markets look like.
Yes, I guess it's
like I wanted to
build it up. Yeah.
I wanted to highlight this comment from Chan Hong, who said, I'll never forget the way Justin pretends like he doesn't read comments on the live stream. For the record, I read every single comment and I'm also the one replying to the comments. I just think, fuck the chat, fuck the listeners.
He's putting his bags, though. He's just ignoring them.
Someone says, no mention of Schizo Poster, Milady, and Remilio airdrop. So there's some kind of airdrop happening. We're not going to make it, unfortunately, apparently, to Crypto Bro. I have never, like, dug deep into the Schizo, Milady, Remilio community and NFTs. I'm not against it. I'm sort of, like, neutral, you know. I'm just kind of observing and... I think it's interesting. It's fascinating, but I guess do any of you guys ever Milady or?
I have two Miladies. I actually bought the top. It's like the literal top. It was when Elon tweeted it. The picture. It went to 6 ETH, and I was like, dude, this is it. It's going mainstream. So I bought 4 at 6.5 ETH. And then I saw Chain that GCR and Kobe dumped like a few hundred Miladies into that event. it's never recovered that ETH value, but the dollar value is there.
But are you getting a Schizo Poster airdrop or something?
I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
Check. I got the Athena airdrop. It was a couple of grand. It was nice.
Yeah, so the founder of Athena seems to be a part of that community. The video... There was this like hype video with like the mantle Athena pendle thing, and there was like a Milady dancing. So that seems to be kind of being incentivized. And the wormhole guys, I think they gave there was obviously Mad Lads, but there was also like these few other collections. Every founder just kind of supports their community, I guess, their NFT community. So. As long as your NFT communities have strong entrepreneurs, you know, you'll make it.
The Milady community seems like they're like terminally online and like very, what's the word? They're just like good trolls, you know?
Also a lot of developers and optimizers in that chat, in those chats.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Any
last? Larry from the block wants to host you at the Emergence Conference. Maybe we can do a Steady Lads live podcast on stage. We'll have to make it happen. Reach out to us, Michael.
All right. We have been talking about this audience, like the pre-show idea. You know, it will be cool to do a live Lads on stage where we can do it at one of the conferences. So maybe Token 2049. In Singapore in September. We'll see if there's some other one that we might all go to, but that'll be fun.
I also see the other question we've got that is pretty legitimate is like BlackRock putting real world value on chain. What does it mean? Is that important? What do you guys think?
This is the Biddle Fund?
The Biddle Fund, yeah.
I mean, it shows their intention that they want to keep taking steps in. So You know, my just concern is that it's very easy to do a treasury product, money market product, do that on chain. Once you start going to the next step, it becomes increasingly harder to, you know, take equities and other things as well. So it was a natural step. Obviously, we have a lot of products similar to that. This is directly from BlackRock, so it's even better. And it is significant. It shows their intention. They're here to play. So I think it's good.
Yeah, I think it's super exciting too. It's like it gives me a lot of hope for the space. Like, we can talk about the cynicism around meme coins, but like, it means something that BlackRock wants to and is comfortable tokenizing things and putting them on chain, which I think is actually pretty special. Like, if someone told you that 10 years ago, you wouldn't have believed it, even 5 years ago. So I think it's pretty cool. It's a good signal.
Can we do pasta now?
Let's do it. It's time for pasta.
I can kick us off because I'm kind of on topic.
Go ahead.
All right.
So we watched the video from the WIF party, and that sort of got me thinking, like, who's holding our bags up at this party? And I saw this amazing tweet and video from RWLK, Ansem and the meme coin sector. And it's that famous video of this guy just like barely struggling to hold up his lady who's like squatting on his shoulders. And the caption is, Ansem in the meme coin sector. And I thought this was so fitting after like the juxtaposition of seeing that WIF party to just thinking like, wow, like how is this thing still afloat? And it's Ansem doing all the heavy lifting. So this one gave me a huge chuckle.
Yeah, he's been doing an amazing job at, I guess, you know, the meme coin narrative. Yeah,
I can just picture Ansem on the stage
chat,
there, just like
his chat was like trading at 200 million or something, right? Like,
yeah, that's crazy. So,
That leads very well into my pasta.
Okay, let's see Thicky's one.
It's in the Telegram group. So, yeah, Ansem's name, cat's name, they found out his name is Hobbs. And they like had this meme coin. So it's funny. It's pretty much just this thing, how much of it thrives on Ansem being like a shelling point for all these degens.
Yeah. I also saw Ansem's post where someone asked Ansem for the Hobbs roadmap, and Ansem replied, dude, it's my cat. There is no roadmap. It's literally.
Oh, that's right here. Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Oh, did he say it? Oh, yeah. There.
That's so funny. That's even better than the original pasta. I didn't even know it was there.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, dude, it's my cat.
Thicky, are those trading alerts? Is that government moved Bitcoin?
Oh, yeah, that was kind of crazy. That was crazy from last week. I forgot that happened.
Yeah.
No, this is something
else. Have they moved it and then not sold it, or what happened? Like, they just did a test transaction?
No, they moved. They sold 2,000 Bitcoin. It's very small, like $30 million.
They just sold a little bit of it.
They sold a little bit, but it just like spooked everyone because, like, you know, it means that they're. We could sell the rest.
How much is all of it?
Not much. They maybe 30,000 Bitcoin, so like 2 billion.
Okay. I mean, I think we've had worse.
Yeah. We've had worse.
2 billion in a bull market's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a week of think about
it. Should be okay. Yeah. Taiki, you're saying that one ties into yours?
Yeah. I feel like we unintentionally just became the Ansem episode, but when I saw this, this was crazy. So this NFT thread or is just, I don't know, like meat writing Ansem and wrote this entire thread around Ansem's childhood, how he came up, and I'm like, dude, like I don't think Ansem wants this, you know, like like I don't even know how he found this. Like I feel like I'm doxxed and I'm uncomfortable now, you know? This is
the meta we're in. You get big enough.
Yeah, I guess this is what happens.
People are going to be making documentaries on like the Ansem phenomenon, like everything about like, you know, cult leadership in an online financial world and stuff.
Yeah, there should be a Netflix documentary.
Our space literally needs it to thrive. Like, it is such a social industry And then all of this money is just based on social consensus that we always need someone to be interested in. It's so weird.
I think like having, we haven't seen these in a while. These were like last cycle things, but remember like last cycle every day we'd make a new one of these like 3x3 charts that we had, like the chaotic good and the lawful bad. I guess we had a mid-curve Justin and Jordy, whatever, at some point.
you were mid-curve, oddly enough. They had, we had like far right curve.
That was the mid-curve. I was the mid-mid-curve.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You were the mid-mid-curve.
You're the DJ mid-curve.
But my point is, there is a segmentation of the users, and you know, some of them are just like, fuck everything traditional, burn it all down, you know, just whatever happens is better than the existing things. Just like, you know, I would maybe say like this meme coin mania and Ansem is kind of like a little bit in that like chaotic direction. You know, you have your Hasus on the other side, you know, trying to like carefully make sure that Ethereum, you know, in 25 years is still going to have the distribution. You know, he's been talking about potentially changing the, this is what they talk about in the ETH maxi circles, is like, do we change the emissions again? Of ETH, like that, that's sort of, and I'm sure they're right. Like, you know, we do need to recalibrate it at some point, but, and you know, I would say that I'm in the middle. I feel uncomfortable with the, like if I was Ansem and somebody started betting $200 million on my cat name, because I said the name, you know, someone's buying the top and someone's going to lose all their money. And I know it's all fun and games at that point. Like no one is like, you know, seriously expecting their investment in, you know, that, that coin to be like a long-term investment, but it doesn't make me a little bit uncomfortable. And
like the loss is still a loss, even if, you know, it's a joke and you're gambling. So,
yeah. I mean, I don't mind if people gamble and lose. I've been around that my whole life and I know that there's demand for that. And people like learn their lesson, and even more deeply. And, you know, this is kind of a bit more controversial, but, you know, as males, especially, I hope there's some females in the chat, but as males, especially, like we're kind of pre-built towards all or nothing. We're not needed. And like, you know, war is kind of an example where a lot of men die, and like, it's just sort of like part of history. The reality is like, if everybody pools their money together and only like 10 people win it all and everybody else is broke, the world will go on. Like, you know, those 10 will just get all the girlfriends, and we're kind of expendable. And so gambling for men is sort of like this way where we just create imbalances, and there's imbalances in wealth. You know, genetically, men are also more imbalanced in IQ and other things compared to females. So what that means is that like, if we're all just pool our money together and one person wins it all, that's sort of part of
you know, Arthur Hayes has proposed the same thesis but a different cause. He was saying like we're all become such gamblers and like fast money people because of monetary policy and inflation. Like when you live in a world where your currency is constantly being devalued,
that forces
like you less, to take risky bets.
Yeah, that's less like evolutionary.
It's a contributing factor as well, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Korea and I've seen just a lot of like the youth there just doesn't feel like they can make it on the ladder. So they just sort of YOLO it. I get it. You know, I kind of feel a little bit in the middle, and I see both sides. I'm a little bit degen and a little bit not degen. So I'll end with my pasta, which was a fun little video. I'm probably one of the oldest people in the chat maybe, but you know, I actually grew up next to Tom's restaurant in New York City when I was a kid. So Seinfeld was a sort of childhood favorite, and there was the soup Nazi. You know, we had our amazing editor put together something really cool for Puff, and we'll just maybe end the show with this.
Steak and chill, boys.
This line is huge.
It's like this all the time.
Isn't that the Sefu guy?
Oh, no. It is. Just be still.
Not too late. I think he picked up the scent.
Hey, Jerry! I didn't know you're making a potion.
Hard to believe.
This guy makes the best red potions, Jerry. The best. You know what they call him? Potion Nazi.
Shh. All right. I'm not letting you cut in line.
Why not?
Because if he catches us, we'll never be able to get potion again.
Okay, okay.
It's great edit.
Is this AI?
Yeah, it's AI.
Wow, that's great.
I'd like to stake 20k putt for my red potion.
30k puff for red potion. Have not cheated.
I didn't get all my potion strength.
Just forget it. Let it go.
Excuse me. I didn't get all my points in.
You got a low community multiplier.
But everyone else in the Discord got a high multiplier.
You want high multiplier? Now divided by three.
What?
No potion for you.
That's actually very talented editing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, Seinfeld's like my favorite show of all time. I really appreciate the meme, Jordy. You killed it. You guys killed it.
Yeah. If you have like a good AI editor and you have a good script, they can crush it. So
yeah, I need an AI guy now. Fuck.
I need an AI guy. Yeah. What the fuck.
People have been asking me who it is. I'm not gonna tell them because, like, even though I
need to poach him.
AI guy.
Fuck. Cool. All right. All right, chat. Let's get a decision here.
Need a vote.
Which pasta is gonna be pasta of the week?
I mean, it's not even fair, Jordy. When you drop that AI-generated, like, 2-minute advanced production value Seinfeld video, and we're just coming in with, like, dusty old tweets that everyone saw 2 days ago.
Okay, we got a cat roadmap as well, so it's...
Cat roadmap is pretty good. Yeah, Seinfeld.
This guy double voting, I love it.
And double voting, the Wagmies double voting.
I think Jordy wins.
Damn, that hurts brain potato.
Okay, it looks like a close second cat roadmap, but Jordy doing pay to win.
All right, he's paying to win.
Pasta.
We'll have to come back with a strong NG next time.
No, I need to pay someone.
Boden, yeah. By next week, I think Boden will be like the number one coin in crypto. So.
Really? Do you have any? Should I buy some?
I don't have any. I stay away from that.
Puff is the next Boden, you guys.
Justin, you have Boden, right?
I fumbled Boden like 50x ago. I don't want to talk about it.
He's on a mental health break. Don't bring that one.
Oh, yeah. He's holding.
No, I'm not even kidding. Like, I literally. I bought it before State of the Union, when no one had heard about this thing. Shilled it to the Astartes Slack and fumbled it away.
I saw like the ratio is like 10 to 1 though between the Boden and the Trump. Like the Trump coin is like 8%.
We all went to DJT. There's the Trump stock meme coin now.
Yeah, the DJT
coin. Truth Social stock is like the meme coin to speculate on if you want to speculate on Trump stuff.
Is it like 40 billion or something?
Yeah, yes. So they're saying Trump is 80 million in the chat I see here. So,
all right. Maybe we'll do a little longing of that.
Maybe there's a little relative value. I don't know if you can.
Relative value? Relative value.
US government selling BTC to buy Boden.
That could be like if Biden wanted to, that could be like a good way to spend capital for like marketing, right? To empathize with the Zoomers, technically. Yeah.
Just like Avalanche is doing with their ecosystem meme coins, Pakinu. The U.S. government can buy Joe Boden. That's the 200 IQ move.
Dude, that is pretty 200 IQ.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Thanks, everybody. I think we had a nice long episode, and we'll catch you next week. Take care.